Keith, along with our special guest today, Anthony Mandel. It's been a lot of months since we had our first. But as the season goes on, we're going to keep kind of ramping things up. Just like training camp. Any camp is set. The momentum starts building. We've been kind of with our Saturday show, the Spectrum show. We've been getting a lot of people joining in and listening online and that, so maybe we should introduce ourselves. Of course, I'm Steve Zottke, the racing guy at Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan, and I've been here almost 10 years, originally employed through the Milwaukee Mile. That's how I started my on-air bidding here, and then eventually they let me fill in on a couple shows, and Jeff Orlowski's been here how long?
About three years, I want to say. Originally from Chicago, been a Packer fan my whole life.
Between you and I, it was kind of like love at first sight, wasn't it?
Oh, you know.
Our eyes met, and we just was.
We both had those little thought bubbles with popping hearts and stuff. It was a beautiful moment. No. My wife is still jealous.
Chemistry is a big thing in radio. Anthony will as soon as we let him talk here in a few minutes, is a big thing. And
back in the corner.
Sparky, who brought me in, and I'm always thankful for Sparky for bringing me in on this side of my new, I don't say new because I've been doing this for a while, but just opening up a door for me. I certainly appreciate it. But there's chemistry, and Jeff and I hit it right off the bat. I've worked with Anthony only a couple times, but Anthony is one of these guys. He's an easy kind of going guy to work with. He's just like peanut butter and jelly, right, Jeff?
Yeah, peanut butter and jelly. That's a good Anthony, way to describe it.
Anthony Mandel, how long have you been with the station?
It's my third year, I think.
So you two have almost been the same, but a little bit of an age difference. And this is why I want to kind of bring into this podcast. Is I don't want to say exactly how old. I'm basically the same age as Chuck and Tim on the show.
And I'm the same age.
Early 50. Yeah. So we're about 10. I'm about 10 years older than Jeff. And then Jeff, I'm assuming you're about 10 years older than Anthony, right? Anthony might be a little more.
I mean, I'm 25.
Okay.
Yes, I got you by.
And you're about 106, something like that.
116 years older
but
than you.
What separates us from the other podcasts is we'll get you up to date with Packer news and opinion and whatnot. But the other thing we try and do is we turn the camera backwards, look in the past. And the last podcast we were talking about drafting busts, and there certainly have been a lot of them with the Packers. There's a few of them we know about, passing on Joe Montana and that kind of stuff. Rich Campbell, there's all these horror stories. But, you know, back then, all the teams had them, with the exception of the Cowboys, because they were the only ones that really had a scouting department at the time. But, you know, everybody had their bust. So it doesn't, you know, understand, life goes on. But I kind of always want to give people their Packers perspective. Like my first memory, my first game I can remember as a little kid is the 1972 season.
Wow.
Yeah, I was a little kid, and I remember it because, well, for one thing, my dad didn't watch too much football. He wasn't a sports guy, but he would tune in and watch the Packers. And I remember for some reason I'm watching the Detroit Lions and the Packers play. And if the Packers are winning 33-0, I'll never forget that score because I'm like, wow, that's a lot of points. They're just running up and down on the Lions, and the Lions scored. And my dad started to cuss. He started to use bad language. I'm like, Dad, what's going on? He goes, there goes the shutout. And thus, I learned the term shutout and what it meant. You got to have the shutout. It's one thing to beat a team, but you always have that shutout too, that egg. Put that egg up on the scoreboard. So, and from that time, I remember O.J. Simpson breaking 2,000 yards, the Bills against the Jets, and I think it was Shea Stadium. And I remember I liked watching the AFL games on NBC because the the fields were clean. Everybody had AstroTurf in the AFC, and so their uniforms are nice and clean. And I'm a dumb kid. I don't know anything better. I don't like mud. I like these exotic teams. The speed of the AFC still at that time, from just coming over from the AFL. So and you had to, you know. So I was really like O.J. Simpson. You know, like wow. And I remember this must be a special thing because they stopped the game and you know they're doing all this hubbub. But those are some of the memories. First Monday night game, Jets, 73, came home from school. My dad goes, you going to watch the football game? Packers are on. I'm like, what? Packer game? It's Monday. It's night. You know, sun's going down. He goes, oh, the Packers are on tonight. I'm like, cool. They played the Jets. They won. That was my first Monday night game. So I never knew they played. I'd never watched a Monday night game before. They let me stay up a little bit late. So
nice.
And then there was the dark years from pretty much the late 70s. There was a blip of hope in 82, and you had John Jefferson, James Lofton, you know, Lynn Dickey, Paul Kaufman, but they had no defense. The Monday night game against the Redskins, which I still say is the best Monday night game ever, 47-45 Packers win with Mark Moseley, the last straight-on kicker in the NFL, missing a field goal. And then you have the god-awful mid-80s, apologies to Gary Ellerson, and then the best thing that ever happened, and I can bring this around. The best thing that ever happened, Tony Mandarich. Because when they drafted Tony Mandarich, it sealed that they were going to throw up their hands and we got to do something. And they did. Because if they would have drafted Barry Sanders, they would have been 8-8. And they would have kept, it would have been the same old, same old. And we would have been just like the Lions. Nothing would have changed, at least in my opinion. They would have been just good enough, maybe get a wild card here and there. The mediocrity is so dangerous in sports. And the Lions have lived with that because of that. Because they had that player that was so special, so good, even though he only got -1 yards against us in one playoff game in 94, I think it was. But I think Tony Mandarich, that just set the table for the changes, Ron Wolf, and the rest is history.
Yeah, it's hard to consider the Tony Mandarich draft as a good thing for the team when he was just a...
You know, sometimes that first wife was so bad, that second wife is so much better.
See, I don't know. I'm still on number one so far. She hasn't got tired of me yet, I don't think, but... you know, I see your point where if say, we did get Barry Sanders, chances are the old regime stays the same. You don't get Brett Favre. Reggie White doesn't come here,
right.
You know, and you don't have any rings. So I could see that. I could see that. But, you know, it's like I said, that's still so painful because when you think about – if they would have had Barry Sanders and then went out and still switched regimes, got Favre and everything like that, the domination that could have taken place until Favre, you know, threw interceptions to cost you the game
right.
again, like he was known to do on many, many, many different occasions. But yeah, it's there's new hope. There's, you know, now because we're kind of in the same situation where the regime has changed again. They kept the head coach, but everybody else is brand new. Obviously, Philbin, it's part
right.
two.
Well, let's revisit that in just a moment. Anthony, what's your first Packer memory?
I want to say it was like 2003.
When they
something
actually
like
should have
that.
Went to the, they should have went to the Super Bowl. That
All
year.
I remember is that it came down to a Week 17 game.
Okay.
And so the Packers won, and if the Vikings lost, they were in. Vikings were playing the Cardinals then.
Oh, that was
year.
2004.
Four?
Yeah.
So you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's the earliest memory I have.
Okay.
Because when they won that Super Bowl, I was, what, 3-4 years old? So I had the posters and all that, but I don't even know if I was there to watch the game.
You know, I've spoken with other youngsters, you know, Bart Winkler. We talked to Radio Bort. Joe, Jeff, and that, and they don't really remember the Packers when they were bad.
Oh, yeah,
they
yeah.
have not really been bad in my lifetime.
Yeah, and think of that. It's like, or the Brewers have never been good.
yeah,
you know, save a couple seasons, except for hopefully this season is looking pretty promising. But you know, it's interesting when that window gets smaller. You know, but I was one of these weird kids. I was always a fan of history. I was always looking back. I was the youngest cousin, the youngest, you know, sibling, everything. So everybody was older than me. So I was always like, oh, what happened before me? So I was always, that's kind of think how I've been steered into my interests in that. But yeah,
I remember a couple, watching a couple Lynn Dickey games back in the day. The thing, my problem was growing up in Chicago, it was always the Bears games that were on. So,
pre-cable.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, I remember a few Lynn Dickey games, but I really started following and becoming a big fan during the Mikowski era.
And, 89, the 89 season?
Yeah. And some of those miracle comebacks and stuff like that, and then, you know, watched every snap of Favre's career and since. So, it, you know, it was...
You know, a lot of people don't know this, because I don't really, you know, I used to be an EMT. And I had unbelievable access. We had a contract at the Bradley Center for the first couple of years. And we had two paramedic units there from the Milwaukee Fire Department and the transport team, third unit. That was us. So basically, we would check in, get our walkie-talkies, and it was like, see you later. We had full access, everything, including locker rooms. The only time we were denied access to the locker room was because of the media circus when Shaq was, in his second year.
Wow.
But and the frustrating thing about it the most was I hated the Bulls. And we were in the Bulls locker room the year they won their first championship. They were the coolest team. They were so nice to us and cool. And I remember talking to Craig Hodges. And you talked to, I'm sure, Chuck and some of these guys. They would say Craig Hodges, one of the nicest guys in the NBA. He was so cool. And I liked him because he was a former Buck and then went to the Clippers. But, oh, yeah, so, so cool. They were such a cool team. But it was fun seeing the game from the floor. But also, I'm dovetailing that, we also had the Packer contract. So I did four games at County Stadium in 1990.
Nice.
And if you ever see some of the old games at County Stadium, you'll see the our ambulance would be parked third base side towards the foul pole. And that's where we would park, and then they would put us in between the two teams. That's where we would stay, where the punters and the kickers would be, and it was so cool. I mean, it was just like, you know, and no, I didn't get run over, even though I was like, you know, you kind of wanted them to, you wanted to be able to run. Oh, I'm 23 years old, so yeah, I can, no problem. I can jump back then yet. Now it'd be another story. But yeah, it was so much. I remember we had the Falcons, a few other games, and worked with Jennifer Baker, the owner's daughter.
Nice.
Yeah, she was nice too. Sweet girl. But yeah, that was a lot of fun. I still got somewhere in my archives, I got those sideline passes. Little chintzy piece of paper with a string on it. That was it back then.
Oh, hey. Well, you know, the Brewers, you know, you get a sticker now unless you have the hard season-long press card that has your picture on it and everything. They hand you a sticker that you throw on your shirt.
Well, should we talk about today or should we talk about yesterday? Because I do got a yesterday story.
Up
or
to
you want to? Well, yeah. Let's talk about Jake Ryan. Jake Ryan, yeah, and you know, me and my buddy at work, we were like, no big deal. So we. A slow white guy isn't on the field. Is that cruel? I mean, are we kind of... Because I've never been impressed by his speed. Well, smart player. I'll give him all that. And it would have been nice to see him in Pettine's new system. But what's your opinion on Jake Ryan?
Go ahead.
Well, Andy. I think in a lot of ways, to me, he was just A.J. Hawk 2.0.
Yeah.
A not super athletic white guy that is going to struggle to get in on a play, but when he gets there, he's going to lock it down. I think he had a value to the defense, but you know, it's not, you know, it's not like you lost a Ray Lewis or, I mean, it's not, well, it's not even like you lost really anything.
Mm-hmm.
Blake Martinez is the way better player.
Yes.
Way better player. So, I mean, he's really only playing because you need two starting inside backers in a 3-4. I wonder, though, because Mike Pettine always talks about that he'll play a scheme to the talent that he has. If with that injury and, like, Nick Perry, Clay Matthews always banged up, if knowing he's not going to have Jake Ryan might influence him into more, like, nickel sub packages or maybe even a little bit of 4-3. So in that way, I think it matters, but not in terms of talent.
Is there a comfort level not having Thompson in charge?
Yes. Because
you know they would not add.
Yeah.
Now, granted.
And especially without Dom Capers, I think there's a comfort level for me.
Right. But Gutekunst said, you know, hey, I'm not gonna sign everybody. You know, he's like, he wants to temper it because everybody's like, well, who are you going to sign? Who are you going to, you know, so he wants to kind of chill everybody out. Hey, you know, I think he said, what did he say? Watching Ted all those years going through scenarios, I think the best practice is patience. Okay. Yeah, he's going to say that. But you know, because Penn said, when he talked to Mike Clemens, he said that I think we're going to address the personnel.
Right.
So, hey, just like a regular team.
Yeah, Pettine left the door open to getting somebody from the outside where Gutekunst tried to slam the door.
Which I can understand that because he doesn't want to – I mean, Ted Thompson's his mentor in that. Ted still wanders the hallway, you know, picking up cigarette butts or whatever he does. And, you know, he doesn't want to go, yeah, we're going to pick up a guy. I have a new scheme here. You know, he wants to ease into this a little bit.
Well, you got to so you keep the leverage on, you know, where teams don't know that you're – desperate need and you're shopping and you're gonna buy something. So
well, there's guys out there too. I mean,
well, I know
there's
there is.
Bowman who has obviously had that god awful injury a couple years ago but had bounced back and
he was pretty good with the Raiders
Cushing,
last year.
Yeah, I'd and Cushing too heartbeat. But Cushing is one of these guys. He's a Clay Matthews, isn't he?
Yeah, he's
and he keeps getting suspended like a dumbass.
He's the guy is as tight as a banjo string.
He is, but especially Anthony, I don't know how you can disrespect A.J. Hawk by comparing Jake Ryan to A.J. Hawk.
Never.
A.J. Hawk had a good, good career
he
for
was
the Packers.
A solid player. He was not
right. He
spectacular.
Didn't live up to, he didn't live up to his draft
No, he wasn't,
position,
yeah.
But he was solid, and he was always available. Always. I think A.J. Hawk missed, what, 3 or 4 games his entire time in Green Bay?
Okay, here's a comparison. Would you rather have someone like Cushing, or who's like a Matthews, who is a dynamic player?
Played together at USC, too.
Yeah, flew around to the ball. But you know what? The guy's probably going to miss 6 games here, 3 games here. Or you want that steady guy all 16?
Give me steady.
Okay.
Well, I think you need to have steady guys because you need some sort of reliability. But if it doesn't really hurt you per se, like you don't want to build a team around guys that are always missing 3-6 games.
Right.
If they're guys you put in the rotation, that's a whole nother animal. That's why I think the Packers really needed this offseason to get some more pass rush help so that you're not dependent on Clay Matthews, but when he can go out there, it's a bonus.
Yeah, but he only has maybe 2 good games a season. I want to say last year he had, what, 1 game? Didn't he have like 4 sacks in 1 game?
Something like that, yeah.
You know, he had just a monster game, and then you don't hear his name for the next 10 weeks. And then somebody wakes his ass up again, and he has another half of a decent game, and then you don't hear his name for the rest of the season.
Let's go listen to Mike Clemens and his report that he had regarding the new Packer defense.
I think there's a lot of things that McCarthy is doing, though, too, as to how he wants Pettine to run things and in the install that they're going on. Most of it looks about the same, but Pettine is very upfront, Gary. He says things like, I can't, you know, put in more than 8 or 9 schemes at night with these guys because you're gonna overload them. It was just 2 years ago Dom Capers was talking about by install 6 or 7 of the playbook. He says, you got to understand, these guys are kind of swimming right now. I'm giving them 20 schemes a night, 20 formations a night. You know, Dom Capers probably overloaded the thing. And you saw those last-minute substitutions in-game, calls late into into checks against what they saw with the personnel, the offense that was out there. And, you know, you ended up Mike Daniels running gassers, you know, 45-yard gassers out to the faraway hash, barely getting his hand in the ground before the opponent snapped the football. You can't have that happen. You've got to have this stuff click through faster. And Pettin has said, he said it again today, because of the CBA and because of the time that we've got, I want to have, you know, less formations and game planning things that we want so that they have that down to a perfection, that everybody in the team knows it, and then we can build from there.
Okay, so that is definitely promising to hear because, you know, how many times were we watching games last year and the offense is walking up and it's total chaos on the Packers side of the ball. Mm-hmm. And everybody's looking at each other like, okay, what's going on? What are we doing? You got guys running in. I understand the substitutions and all blah, blah, blah. But it seemed like a lot of chaos. And I think, and plus what you heard Rodgers say, you know, with Pettin, you know, with that talk he gave, it just seems like there's definitely a new sheriff in town. What's your opinion so far on the defensive side of the ball?
I'm cautiously optimistic. I have a lot of great faith in Pettin that he's going to turn it around, bring the nasty. There's going to be a different attitude. There's going to be a different hustle with these guys. I think the fact that, you know, we heard for years about how thick Dom Capers' defensive playbook was, I think that is a mistake, especially with the amount of young guys and undrafted free agents that were constantly in the lineup and forced to play because of Ted Thompson. So I think that it will be a better prepared defense, a defense that knows their job and their responsibilities. Now it's, do these guys have the talent? Are we going to get the same Ha-Ha Clinton Dix that sucked all last year? Or are we going to get a good version of Ha-Ha? You know, it's going to be like that with a lot of players.
Was that Tremont Williams that said the Packers, or he thought the other other offenses had caught up to Capers' defense?
Yeah, and knew what plays were, what defenses they were calling.
It certainly seemed that way, because I remember watching with a couple of my buddies, who actually we might have on this podcast.
Are they out of jail?
Yes, they're out of jail. So I'll have to talk to them about
it.
But, I mean, we would be looking at each other like, what is going on here? You know, they're just getting picked apart. And is it a case, Anthony, where guys weren't let to be instinctive, but they were reactive?
Yeah, and I think that's probably the worst way you can play defense. It's really, really old school, but if you just go back to the golden era of Packer football in the mid-60s, it wasn't really a lot of plays. It wasn't complicated. They were just so fundamentally sound that even if you knew what was coming, even if you had all the skill in the world and knew how to beat it, that they were going to get what they wanted out of it, whether it was on the defensive side or the offensive side. And I think Dom Capers' playbook was just way, way too complicated, like you were saying, that players had to be reactive. And when you're on your heels like that, you're going to get hurt because, you know, it's hard enough when a guy's running at you full speed to plant your feet, wrap up, and tackle him. But if you're running backwards nonetheless because you don't even know where the play is coming, or that they are so on top of you that they're a step ahead of you in your own defense.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought Dom Capers' defense, so many layers of it were just wrong for the modern NFL.
Oh, it was kind of like the opposite of the Patriots. What's their motto? Do your job.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and they weren't doing their job because they really didn't know what their job was.
Exactly.
And the other thing, if you saw that thing on Belichick, when they beat the Seahawks, it was the preparation. It was knowing that, you know what, on the goal line, they called this one play where they, you know, and they were ready for it. The guy, you know, I mean, so it's the scouting, it's everything that's involved with it. But sometimes, yes, let's get the simple stuff done first.
Yeah, but the preparation goes deeper than just Capers and the mistakes that his system and he created. You know, we've talked for years about how predictable the Packers' offense is. You know, the one thing that Bill Belichick does, which is unlike everybody else in the league, is he has, you know, he'll sit there and have a game against the Jets where he throws the ball 53 times in that game because he knows that's the best way to beat them. And then the very next week, they'll be playing Buffalo, and he'll run the ball 60 times. You know, he will completely change his approach depending on who is on the other side of the ball. We don't have that.
Yeah.
Nowhere near.
Well, I think a prime example, too, is like, think about just, I feel like it's been for years now, pretty much ever since Corey Dillon's time was up in New England, where they just keep like five okay running backs and then just use whichever one suits their purpose that week. Like, on any given week, James White will go for 20 carries, 110 yards, and two touchdowns, one in the air. Then the next week, he doesn't touch the ball.
Yeah.
And so they have this constant flow of guys that really none of them are, for the most part, none of them are special, but they all have a specific purpose. And so he doesn't look at guys as guys. He looks at guys as skills and roles in New England. And the Packers don't do that. They're just like, I don't even know what they do. It just, at least on the defensive side of the ball, it just seems like they've been just deer in the headlights, completely lost for like 5 years.
Well, it'll be interesting to see with the first couple preseason games what, you know, what kind of, I mean, obviously it's going to be real vanilla. You always hear that during the preseason, but it'll be interesting to see because it when you break in a new defense, it's like my buddy used to always say, there's always going to be a lot of special teams touchdowns early in the year because, well, it's early in the year and they're working out their schemes. Same thing with the defense. The Saints last year, 40 and 40, I think they gave up. And then once they started to click, you know, obviously there was the gaffe in the playoff. But, I mean, once after those two games, now, I don't think the Packers are going to give up 40 and 40. But if they do, I mean, you're going to have, oh, these people calling off. Oh, the fans, I pity you, Anthony. I really do, having to take all those calls.
I'll just take the whole season off. If it starts like that, back-to-back 40-point games, I'll just take the whole season off.
All right, let's switch over to the offensive side of the ball. And apparently, the Packers have to have that great white wide receiver, don't they? Harkening back to Carroll Dale, and who else? In back in the day, Bill Schrader and those guys. Jake Kumerow, is he the new Jeff Janis? Is this just another bunch of hype? Because Packers drafted three wide receivers, and now we got this kid is just tearing up camp.
Yeah.
What is he going to make the team? What's the deal?
I mean, I would doubt it if he makes the team, because there's always some Cinderella guy.
It's
whether
be
it's
that mysterious ham back injury,
whether it's
game
training
four
camp,
of the preseason,
spring training, NBA summer league, whatever it is, there's always some guy that's just a superstar when he's going up against all the threes, and then you put him in there, showtime. Let's see if you can really go against real top tier NFL caliber guys, and he tweaks his hammy or he just gets lit up, something bad happens. I don't really see this going anywhere, just because, like you mentioned, they drafted three wide receivers. You know Devontae's making the team.
Yeah.
I would assume that because you cut Jordy Nelson, that you, no matter what happens in camp, Randall Cobb is making the team.
Yes.
That, although, you know, sometimes we think that, and then lo and behold, like a few years back, and then Josh Sitton is all of a sudden out of town. Sometimes these guys we think are going to make it are just gone.
But I think he's got a good chance of making the team.
Cobb, you would think Geronimo Allison is going to make the team?
That one could be interesting. It depends. It all depends on the three-headed monster.
And I think for sure Jimmy Graham, Mercedes Lewis are going to make the team.
Yeah.
So, you know, they used to keep like seven wide receivers because they didn't have any other passing options. So I don't think you're going to keep seven this year. It might be five.
Yeah, but
five receivers they might keep.
Tight ends.
I know that, but I just mean options in the passing.
But are they? Are they really?
I think they are
receivers, but they don't count towards the position.
I would really.
I know they don't count toward the position group, but I'm saying if you have two legitimate pass catchers as opposed to a Richard Rodgers who you keep in the tight end group because he can block. Now, okay, well, we got two guys that can catch. We probably don't need to keep, you know, Jamon Moore on the active roster 16 games because he's like the eighth option in the passing game.
Mercedes Lewis is going to be your goal, especially his value is going to be at the goal line. When you go to a two tight end set and he's going to do that block and then he's going to go wander out in the flat, you know, while Jimmy Graham is getting double teamed. I mean, that brings up so much flexibility. But how many times is Graham going to be in the slot? It'll be interesting to see. I think we'll see that. That's one thing we'll probably see right away in preseason. But, you know, he's tight end, wide receiver. I mean, that's a fantasy football question, too. I mean, do you start – I mean, they were talking last year about that. Some of these guys are lining up in the slot so much. Are they really a tight end anymore?
Yeah, I just think with Kumerow, I think he's got a great chance of making this team. Does anybody have any faith in Trevor Davis? I don't need to see Trevor Davis touch the
football. Oh, he looks so good, though. You hear these reports, he's rejuvenated, this and that. But, yeah, you see these flashes. But
I'd pack his bags for him. He doesn't. Yeah. He does nothing for me. Geronimo does nothing for me, besides the fact that he's got a fantastic first name. You know, but I wouldn't keep him around just because of his name. You know, he hasn't done much. What are you going to see when
he's just a guy?
When all these rookie guys that we have drafted, you know, when they have to step on the field and face legitimate
size.
NFL talent,
they're looking at size.
Okay, but you know,
and
maybe,
Geronimo doesn't have the size. These three guys do.
Maybe Equanimeous drops the ball or gets hurt. You know, maybe Jamon gets hurt or you know.
Well, that's the thing.
One
of those guys is probably going to have to get a hammy. They always do, right?
One of them's probably going to get hurt. And, I mean, none of them were, I think, weren't they, like, all taken in the fifth round or later?
Yeah.
So the Packers have cut fifth-round picks out of camp before. I don't think all three are going to make the team.
Oh, I think they do.
Which makes it
even
impossible.
If they're healthy, I don't
Unless
think all
Trevor
three
Davis
are going to make the team.
Starts running back punt returns and kick returns in the preseason. I think Trevor Davis is the odd man out.
I agree.
He fields every punt at his own 2-yard line.
Yeah. I think Trevor Davis might be
the
worst punt returner that I've seen on this team since Antonio Chapman.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think he's horrible. I don't think Trevor Davis has any business on an NFL roster. Go play in Canada, bro.
Yeah, catch balls from Johnny Football.
All right, let's go into Wayback Machine. I'm going to mention a name, see if you guys remember it. I don't expect Anthony to know this guy, but this is kind of like a Jake Ryan type guy was supposed to be. And there's been all these guys throughout history that and unfortunately become a bit of a asterisk, what could have, and that's Mark D'Onofrio.
Oh, yeah.
Second round draft pick from Penn State in 1992. Anthony, this kid was smart. He had the smarts of – it's hard to compare him now because linebackers were a lot bigger back then. They were a lot
stockier.
Not stockier and whatnot, and he was. And plus, the schemes were different too. But, you know, he was a kid that was – he was Penn State, and he was probably one of the smartest guys out there. And I've never heard – this. And this is before HIPAA laws – but he had, I think some people have said, a catastrophic hamstring injury. So the only thing I was doing some research on him because you always heard about this awful injury he had in, the third game of the year. And he had some little injuries in the preseason, too. So we really never got a good look at him in the preseason. And plus, the coverage wasn't like it is now. Training camp, he did a lot of stuff in training camp. You know, everybody was excited about him, and he had this injury. And all I can think of is the thing must have been ripped. You know, it must have been one of right off the bone. Really bad injury. And then he came back in '93. He might have, and had another injury, and pretty much had to retire. He is now the defensive coordinator for University of Houston. He signed a $1 million contract. He's been around football on the coaching side now, and that makes sense because he was, you know, Joe Paz, you know, one of his disciples and was a smart guy and had a lot of respect. And now he's finally kind of chugging his way through the coaching ranks. I wouldn't be surprised if he becomes a head coach pretty soon in Division I. But Mark D'Onofrio is one of these guys where you were like, you know, I remember listening to the one sports show that we had in Milwaukee on radio back then for only 2 hours during, you know, once a day. And, you know, we're like, oh, yeah, once we get this guy, this is who we need and this and that. Because you could tell 92, you knew something was different. And this, you know, this new quarterback kid, and you know, you kind of could tell things were kind of moving in the right direction right off the bat. But Mark D'Onofrio was a guy they were like, oh yeah, okay, he's hurt now, he'll come back. And you know, they didn't say how badly he hurt was, but just you kind of always wonder what could have been. It's just like, you know, so many of the safeties and cornerbacks through the years, Tim Lewis, his injury he had, I think it was against the Steelers. He was a Pro Bowler. You know, what could have been, you know, with some of these guys on the Packers. And Mark is one of those guys that, you know, the defense, who knows, that it wouldn't have been that guy that could have beat the Cowboys in 95, maybe got him to the, you know, Super Bowl a year earlier, who knows. But yeah, he's one of those guys that forgotten guy, but he was supposedly on his way to greatness, and that was one of Ron Wolf's better picks on paper, but then materialized on the field.
Well, he's a cautionary tale because you hear everything out of training camp this year, and it's nothing but heaps of praise for Jair Alexander, for Kevin King, for Josh Jackson. You know, everybody who plays on the team is just, oh, God, they're off to such a great start, and they should be able to step right in and make a difference, and Kevin King will be CB1. And, you know, it's just – it's crazy. And, you know, I used to buy into that stuff for years and years and years. And then all of a sudden you sit there and you see some of these guys play, and they just don't have it. And they get hurt. And Jake Ryan is a perfect example. The Packers are back into midseason form, and training camp's a week old. You know, we got our first ACL. We're not even in a week, in camp a week. You know, Aaron Jones got a hamstring injury already. Kentrell Bryce is hurt. You know, it just, the list goes on and on. It's the same old story with these Packers.
Well, it's like that way across the board, though. I mean, I get a lot of stuff from the Indianapolis, from the media from Indianapolis, and you know, oh, the Colts this, Colts that. They don't realize, a lot of people, well, some of them do, but a lot of people don't realize that team's going to be 3-13 if they're lucky.
The Colts?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Colts are just, it's going to be ugly for
them.
They're
decimated.
But we certainly appreciate you joining us today, Anthony.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And look forward to doing another podcast with Jeff in a couple weeks, and we'll see who we can drag in here. But we got some, I got some guests lined up. Should be interesting, a lot of fun as we take a look at Packer history then and now, and it's chugga chugga time. It's coming quick. Hall of Fame game is just
tomorrow.
Jeez, time flies.
Yeah.
So
Bears loss of the season tomorrow night.
And finally, justice is served. Jerry Kramer is going into the National Football
Hall. Hell yeah!
It's about time.
Long overdue. He's the reason. Now, you might not know this by looking at me. I played guard in high school.
Yeah.
Because of watching old NFL films footage of Jerry Kramer and Fuzzy Thurston.
My respect level just went up a bit here.
I was smaller then, too.
Yeah.
Don't give him that much credit once you talk to him.
Yeah, I wasn't very good. Now, I was not very good, but I did play.
Well, you had the speed for a pulling guard, though, didn't you?
No.
Okay.
I was horrible. I was like 5 feet tall. Everybody else was like pushing 6 feet. So even if I was just motoring by, all their strides are twice as long as mine.
Did you have the glasses on under the helmet?
No, actually, I had not. It wasn't until I started getting my bell rung a little bit after 4 years that I actually started losing my sight a little bit.
Oh, so the CTE.
Yeah, that was kicking in, yeah.
You know, there's a race car driver. Just turn this around to the racing side, speaking of that. There's a guy who used to wear these nerdy, like U.S. Army glasses in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back when you were back then, the Army would just give you glasses, and they were god awful looking things. And he would wear these things racing. Anyways, he was a sprint car driver, Doug Wolfgang. He got into a wreck, got a concussion, and fixed his eyesight.
Nice.
Hasn't worn glasses since.
That's awesome.
So yeah. Sometimes you know,
rags to riches story there.
Yeah, you get hit just right, and sometimes your vision can be fixed. So.
I've heard some things like that too. Just pedestrian people just getting in car accidents, all of a sudden their back pain's gone.
Right. Yeah.
Like it just happened to knock something in the right way. you know.
I remember playing
probably
football.
Not the majority of people, but every now and again you get lucky.
You know, playing football, you know, no pads, just with a bunch of guys, but tackle.
Fun stuff.
And making a great, great tackle with a big guy. We were both of us, two 200-pounders, open field, perfect textbook tackle. And he hit me so hard, he cracked my neck. I felt my neck crack because he kind of got an elbow right above the shoulder, mm-hmm. right in the, as I was like, he was like, oh, felt good. He just hit it right, you know.
Nice.
So, but on that thought, we thank you for listening, and please join us again for another Green and Gold Then and Now podcast. Jeff Orlowski, thank you. Once again, Anthony Mandela, thank you. And how can we hear you on 105.7 FM, The Fan?
Well, you can listen to me and everybody else on the radio.com app at 105.7fmthefan.com. But I'll be doing the On Deck show every Sunday the rest of Brewer season, as
Excellent.
I have been. To this point, and every now and again, I'll make a guest appearance on the big show.
They're not going
to
bounce you,
Chuck
and
Winkler.
If they make it into the World Series, they're not going to big time you.
Nope, I don't think they're going to big time me. I've been doing a pretty good job. Nobody's had to yell at me about anything, so
very good.
Yeah, I feel like it's going all right.
Excellent. So, and Jeff, you can join Jeff and I every Saturday for the Final Inspection show, 12 to 2 on Saturday, and also don't forget to like us. On TFI, the Final Inspection Show on Facebook, and then also follow us on Twitter at Steve Zautke, Zautke, and Jeff.
At Jeff_Orlowski.
And how do you spell that odd name? No, you're missing a vowel, I think, right?
Yeah, Orlowski, no W.
And Anthony, how can we find you?
On Twitter, at Anthony Mandela, 2 L's.
Wow,
simple.
Look at that. You didn't have to be Anthony Mandela 648.
Nope. My name was in there.
Wow, look at
One
that.
One of the lucky few.
Yeah, very good. All right, well, thank you for listening, and we'd like to thank our sponsor, Oxygen, here since the Earth has been cooling, and free to all participants. Thank you for Oxygen.